you said, can we record at noon, I started my computer because I knew it was going to take that long to get the shits together.
It's ridiculous. Like, the one that I used to edit and everything, when I start that computer, it sounds like it's about to explode.
Yeah, my fan makes a sound that no fan should make.
Ugh, it's not good. And then I'm thinking, well, fuck, like, I have to, like, start emailing myself all of, like, our musics and things like that. Because
just get an external hard drive.
I don't know what these words are.
It's a little box that you plug in via USB to your computer, and then you can drag and drop all of your stuff to it so you don't have to email everything. And then it's like,
I didn't know that.
In case your hard drive explodes, which it inevitably will, because it's a computer. And, you know, they have a lifespan. Yeah. You don't have everything, like, in the cloud. You have it, like, on its own little hard drive.
Oh, that's a good idea. Where do you get that at?
Anywhere. Target, Best Buy, Walmart should have them.
Okay, I'm going to get one of those. Because, like, if this computer that I have explodes and takes everything with it in the fiery blaze.
Which it will.
My house is full of plants. Like, everything will go up.
Yeah. Just like our, a tinderbox.
I know. All of our episodes, all our music, our transition music, everything is on that computer. So we would be fucked.
No, we wouldn't, because I have backups of everything.
That is true. You do. But, like, when I put Toil and Trouble in an LLC, which I still keep fucking forgetting to dissolve since there's no longer a threat of us being sued from doing the Gypsy Blanchard shit.
Because that was real.
That was real. That was a very real situation that I had to act very quickly to make sure that, I don't know, the person threatening to sue us, in case we used information from a TV show that never got made. I wouldn't, like, lose my house and my car and everything to my name, so.
But sidebar, Walmart has them on sale right now for, like, under $70.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay, yeah. I can
get one of those. It's, like, 2 terabytes for $62.49.
I mean, you can say terabyte. I have no fucking idea what that means.
It's a lot of space.
As long as I can get, like, our shit on there.
It's the one thing I love about, like, our hosting platform is, like, everything is saved to the cloud, too.
Right. But, that is the one perk with Anchor.
Yeah. I mean, I like their analytics, but, I mean, they're not so great as far as, like, getting us hashtag sponsors, but, like, it is what it is.
That's just, like, the whole point of us signing up.
Yeah.
To match with sponsors. And they did it, like, twice. But then they'll give us the charity ones where we don't get paid for.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, but you know what, I have decided, like, since my life has calmed down a little bit, especially now that, like, we are starting to relax some of the COVID protocols at the hospital, I'm able to start having a little bit more time in the day to look for the sponsors and to start promoting the show again.
Are your state's numbers falling consistently?
They are pretty level, but what's happening is I'm no longer having to disaster privilege doctor after doctor. So that's good. So we aren't needing the, like, insane amount of help that we were needing. Because for a while there, it was, like, constant, and my days were really long, and it was super stressful. But now it's just, like, normal stress, like, normal short change files and things like that that gets plopped on me. It's nothing like it was. Yeah, and I know that I read online that, for everybody who doesn't know, I live in Missouri, the city of Joplin is letting their mask mandate expire. So for a while in the Midwest, like, Joplin was a pretty big epicenter because, you know, you've got Oklahoma literally right there, and there's, like, all of this traffic exchange. So I think we're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, I don't know in regards to, like, any of that stuff, like, if our state's mandates are changing, but, like, they shouldn't for right now.
Oh my god, I have to tell you, my cat Amelia was
my favorite.
Your favorite. I'm sitting here looking out the window, and she must have a bug or something, but she was, like, jumping and, like, because it's finally warm. It's like 50 degrees. It's a little rainy here.
Yeah, here too.
Outside. And she was just, like, jumping and grabbing us up in the sky. Oh, it was just such a nice, happy moment.
I love her. I love that for her.
They have been so cooped up because we had that like horrible weather.
That like ice storm.
Oh my gosh. Well, it got like, I mean, our winters the last few years here have been pretty mild, but.
Here too.
But it got to be like negative 20, and I'm not even exaggerating.
We didn't get that, but we got like a random like dumping of like almost a foot of snow that's now gone.
Yeah, all of our snow is gone. But I walked.
Thank God.
One morning, and I walked into the front room, and the water bottle, like the water bowl for the dog, frozen. In the house. So I was like, ugh, not great.
No, you would have thought that, you know, mom would have had the heat all the way up.
That's the thing, though. Like, the heater never stopped running in the house. But it was just so cold. We could not get the house. Like, the heater couldn't catch up, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just so cold. We were just, like, wildly unprepared for winter because we've not had to deal with, like, a crazy scary winter. And, like, you know, I saw all of those people in Texas. Like, did you see that picture of the person's fish tank?
Yes.
Yeah, that was so scary.
Like, I don't need that. Like, I saw some TikTok of some lady who, like, literally took all of her, because they had no power, had all the refrigerator groceries and threw them in the snow to keep them cold.
For sure.
Absolutely. And, like, the thermostat in her house was set to 90, and it was reading 47 during the day.
Yeah, I can strongly identify with that. Like, luckily, in the shed, we have some kerosene heaters, because this is the country.
Yeah.
And so your power goes out, and you're fucked. So
you just pop them on. Yeah.
Hold a kerosene heater, but you don't want to run that when you're sleeping, because it's, you know, it's dangerous. So during the day, it was fine, but at night, it was really, really difficult to deal with.
We have, like, the way our downstairs half bath is, like, it was definitely, like, I'm pretty sure part of the back porch, and they just walled it off, so it's a half bath.
That makes
like,
sense.
Just cut the long porch in half, or whatever, and, so there's no, like, heat access to it, so I have to run a space heater in the downstairs bathroom to be able to pee, because it gets real cold. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid to leave that shit on overnight, so every morning it's, like, freezing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's dangerous. You never know what could happen with electricity, especially while you're sleeping. And then with the kerosene heater, I mean, it's, like, literally, like, liquid propellant. Like, it's meant to set on fire. So if that gets knocked over or something happens, like, the whole house will catch on fire.
I went to high school with a girl who, her family had an electrical fire when nobody was home and their whole house burned down.
That's like, I mean, that's why when you leave the house and you're like, oh my gosh, did I unplug the straightener? Unplug the straightener? Yes, exactly. So it's like stressful. But I do have, for the space heaters in the house, I have the ones that are on a timer. So it's like, every hour or so it shuts off, but also if like the dog knocks it over, it turns off immediately.
I mean, that's smart.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what I got, because I was just worried about, like, you know how animals are, especially when you have a bunch of them like I do. The Toria Zoo. So it's
it's chaos.
I mean, yeah, it can be chaos, but the cats, since I got them all fixed, they have, like, mellowed out, and now they're all getting super fat.
Good.
I bought a better, like, higher protein food and everything, so they're eating less, but they're just, because it's been cold, they're just not as active, so.
They're just fat.
They're all chonky, but this summer, they'll be outside, they'll be running around, they'll be hunting, it'll be fine.
How many dogs do you have at your mom's? I don't even know.
Too many.
Is it more than three?
Yes, but here is the thing, though. There's also 25 acres here.
Yeah, that's huge. That's what I'm saying. You have, like, a ton of land.
Yeah. There's a bunch of land. There's a pond. There's everything the dogs need. So, it's, like, it's not even, like, a thing, you know?
Right.
But, you know, we also don't want to let, like, Barney or the bulldog, like, run around by themselves.
Oh, baby Barney. He's so tiny. Oh, my God.
Baby Barney.
I love him.
My sister, for everyone who doesn't know, has a Cavalier King Charles named Barnaby the Brave. And we call him Barnaby the Brave because he is a giant scaredy cat. My mom has a poodle who we call Poopy. Her name is Lucy. But we call her Poopy because she's like a little baby Poopy. And so Lucy Poopy went into heat, and Barney was, oh gosh, maybe he was close to a year old. He got his first boner because that dog was in heat. And
did it scare him forever?
Oh, he screamed. He screamed and he screamed and he cried because he didn't know what was wrong with his little wiener. And he had to literally be wrapped in a blanket and held for the rest of the night.
I'm sure that's what it's like for young men in general.
I don't know. I'm not one, so I don't know. But the dog was thoroughly freaked out by it. Oh, gosh. He fell off the couch one time just because he was sleeping and he needed to have been held for hours afterwards. Like, he's just a big baby.
I like that for him.
So we call him Barnaby the Brave. A little bit of a misnomer. I know, he's very sweet. Well, should we dive into our topic for today? Oh, hi, everybody. Welcome to Toil and Trouble, podcast of the macabre. I'm Tori.
Hey, hi, I'm Ash. How are you?
We're really shitty at introducing the show because we just start talking to each other. And then we're like, oh, we should probably fucking do what we came here to do.
Yeah, let's get on the road for this adventure because it's going to be a long one.
We've got two longies and a row. Oh, that's gross. We've got two long ones in a row. Two big boys. Big boys. I gotta stop talking. I quit. This week and next week, we're gonna be talking about the vile vortices and paranormal triangles. This episode started because we wanted to do like the Bermuda Triangle, and we want to do the Bridgewater Triangle, right?
That's correct.
Yes. And I was like, oh, that's a really cool idea. I'll do the Alaska Triangle. And then in the course of my research, I found like 1,000 other things. So this episode is going to be kind of all over the place. And then the next one will be over the Bermuda Triangle. But I don't know.
Beauty.
Yeah. I kind of like the idea of like each month, like having a theme, like something. I don't know.
Let us know, like, seriously, let us know what you think, because we're trying to, like, plan out the show, like, in advance, so that way we could, like, get it done, and then, like, spend time researching our next topic.
Yeah, we want to do, the goal is to, like, because we're going to record, like, both at once, so then we have a whole month to research the next topic, as well as, like, find new ways to promote the show and bring in new listeners. So there's, like, a lot of things going on behind the scenes. We're not just being lazy, I promise.
I mean, kind of, but, like, it's different.
Our sources for today's episode are a little bit suspect, not gonna lie. But it's hard to get some, like, solid, scholarly sources for this kind of thing. For information on Ivan Sanderson, we pulled a lot of that from Wikipedia. Then we used The Atlantic. That was a great one. Ranker.com, vilevortices.net, and ancient-origins.net. Take it for what it is. We're having fun with this episode, guys. Ivan Sanderson was a Scottish biologist and writer who later in life immigrated to the U.S. and would go on to be a founding father of cryptozoology. Sanderson is an all-around pretty spooky guy, which I can appreciate, with a background in biology. And he actually is the one that gave birth to the phrase cryptozoology, which I thought was pretty cool. And he did that in 1940s, which is actually a lot older than I thought that phrase would be.
Yeah, that sounds like a 70s-esque.
70s, like... 80s, yeah. But I definitely didn't realize it was that old. Sanderson placed a lot of attention on sea and lake monsters, great apes like the Yeti and Sasquatch, and he also fell victim to the giant penguin hoax.
So oh, no.
Oh, that's, we should talk about that one episode, because it's kind of cute.
Yeah, we should, let's do that for, like, next month. Let's do something, like, weird. Let's do giant penguins and, like, you know, something else.
We'll do cryptids next month. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Somebody send us a cryptid to do, so, you know, like, your state's cryptid.
Yeah, that could be cool, like, regionalized cryptids, and then we could do a big one on, like, Mothman or something.
Mothman.
I am obsessed with Mothman, especially that song that, I'll have to, like, find it, and I'll post it in the story or whatever, but it's like, believe, believe, if you can, believe in the power of the Mothman. I don't know. I love it.
I need that to accompany like a sweet cartoon.
Well, this guy has this whole album of like paranormal music, and I found it randomly on Spotify, and it's so funny. But yeah, I'll post it on social media, so if anybody is even interested in that, they can find it. But okay, he was, like I said, a super spooky guy, but he started off as a biologist, and he wrote a lot of books. So he is a legitimate scientist who had a legitimate career. And he wrote books such as Green Silence, Travels Through the Jungle of the Orient, which I feel like is like not an okay word anymore.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Animal Treasure, Ivan Sanderson's book of Great Jungles, Caribbean Treasure, Follow the Whale, and then The Silver Mink came, like, to name a few. So there's just a few of these legitimate biology / like naturalist books that he wrote. Sanderson had a great love for plants and animals, which transformed into kind of like a bigger what if. Like, where did all of this come from? What if there's more? I think that's kind of a logical step for somebody like Sanderson, because, you know, what if there is more? Where did all of this come from? But he kind of takes it a little step further, and he just fully submerges himself towards the end of his career into the paranormal. He writes books like Invisible Residence, The Reality of Underwater UFOs, Investigating the Unexplained, Uninvited Visitors, A Biologist's Look at UFOs, and perhaps his most famous work, Abominable Snowman, Legend Come to Life. The story of subhumans on 5 continents for the early ice age until today. So, you know, it's good when it has like 3 titles, right?
Oh, totally.
He really believes that every continent has its own version of like the Sasquatch. And he broke down and regionalized what they were. Fast forward to August of 1965. Sanderson launches the Ivan T. Sanderson Foundation in your home state of New Jersey.
I did not know that.
Yes. And he devotes himself to the study of the paranormal. In 1968, he coins the term vile vortex. And he begins collecting information or evidence, I say with quotations, on locations that have a higher than normal occurrence of unexplainable events. He compiled a list of 12 vile vortices, and we're going to discuss 11 of them today. And like I said, our next one is our big breakdown on the Bermuda Triangle. But we're also going to throw in 2 extra because we love you. So I'm going to do the Alaska Triangle. Ash has got the Bridgewater Triangle. A few quick notes about the vile vortices. If you lay them on the map, other than the North Pole and the South Pole, they're actually pretty equidistant to each other, which is an interesting point. All locations report UFO visitations, strange sightings of unknown creatures, ominous feelings. So that's kind of what we're going with. Just like kind of ooky places. These areas are also known for extreme electromagnetic energy, as well as disappearances of ships and planes. But also, like, I do love alliteration, and vile vortices is just fun to say.
We need that like on a t-shirt.
Victoria's Vile Vortices. I love it.
You're welcome.
The official 12 are the Algerian megaliths in the Sahara Desert, Mohenjo-Daro, the Devil's Triangle, aka the Devil's Sea, the Bahamakua volcano in Hawaii, Easter Island, the South Atlantic Anomaly, the City of Great Zimbabwe, the Wharton Basin on the west coast of Australia, Loyalty Islands on the east coast of Australia, the North Pole, the South Pole, and finally the Bermuda Triangle. I just wrote, really, guys, just a paragraph on each of these just so we could get like a basic summation of what they are. So the Algerian megaliths, they're exactly what they sound like. Algeria is located in the Sahara Desert, and it has this group of monoliths which expand over a vast distance of the desert, like on its way to Timbuktu, which I also did not know was a real place.
I
did not know that. I feel kind of stupid now.
That's okay.
Yeah, but I just always thought it was like a thing, like a stupid saying somebody had. But no, it's a real place. And planes have been known to completely disappear in this area. There's a burial ground called Jebel Mazala Salusti that has really scary, oppressive atmosphere that people don't enjoy going to. The area also hosts a bunch of like a cave system with incredibly ancient art on the inside, showing that the location was used for a lot longer than scientists have thought that they did originally. But again, like this is just an expansive area within the Sahara Desert. So it is very possible that, you know, human error and it's the desert, things kind of happen. But, you know, navigational equipment doesn't work there all the time. It's just kind of a scary spot. So Mohenjo-Daro, if you're a fan or a casual watcher of Ancient Aliens, the name Mohenjo-Daro should be vaguely familiar to you. Now, this is located in Pakistan and was built around 2500 BCE. It was one of the world's earliest and largest cities. The name Mohenjo-Daro translates to Mound of Dead Men, promising start in our line of work here. The city was one of the most advanced at its time, and it had wells for water. It had lots of housing for people, housing for grain. There was obviously like animals were kept there. It was like, it's even, according to what I read, the epicenter for the domestication of chickens.
Oh, how lovely.
Isn't that weird? I never thought about that, but that's really kind of cool. I kind of want to learn more about that because like who ate the first egg? Who was like, oh, that chicken shit that out. I should probably put it in my mouth.
Yeah, that thing that just fell out of its Y slot since chickens don't have like real buttholes. Yeah.
Yeah, let me put that inside of my mouth. Yeah,
what do I do with it? Let me just put it over some fire and make it hot.
How does that happen? Has to be aliens, but
yeah, aliens totally decided scrambled eggs were a thing.
Mohenjo-Daro was so advanced for its time. Many ancient astronaut theorists believe the city was visited, and knowledge was given to them from an alien race. The ancient alien gods giveth, but apparently they also taketh away, because these theorists believe that the city was a victim of a nuclear blast before nuclear blasts were a thing.
So bizarre. Like, there's no inclination that it could have been, like, an asteroid, maybe?
Well, the city is just abandoned.
Oh. And
What they cite as evidence is they claim that radiation has been found on the site, and vitrification is found there, which is a process of like things turning to glass as exposure to really high heat. Animals avoid the area, and then they found some bodies just like really, really preserved very, very well. And they think that's all a sign of a nuclear blast. But, you know, I don't want to be negative Nancy and ruin the fun because all this episode is really fun. But I kind of, the buildings are still standing. So if there was some kind of nuclear blast, I feel like the buildings would be gone, right?
I would think so.
And also, like, the body preservation, I mean, it's the desert. It dries everything out. It kind of makes sense that they would be mummified perfectly.
Yeah, all that moisture just got sucked out.
Archaeologists have claimed that they have not found any radiation or proof of anything like that at the site. And the vitrification where they found the glass, it was from a pottery pit because they also found chunks of pottery in it. So take it for what it is. But the biggest mystery is no one really knows what happened to the people who lived there and why the city was abandoned. So the working theory is aliens, for some people, not for like scientists, but the working theory is that aliens did away with the people. So we don't know. It's spooky places. People go there and they experience like weird energy feelings. They just have an uncomfortable feeling being there. And I think, I don't know if it's actual energy or if it's just knowing the history of Mohenjo-Daro and these people just disappeared. It would creep me out. The Dragon's Triangle. Also known as the Devil Sea or the Formosa Triangle. This is located off the coast of Japan, and the area is known for being dangerous, and ships sink or simply just disappear. The triangle stretches from Japan and the island of Bonin all the way to parts of the Philippines. So it's a pretty big, like, plot there. The area is known for sightings of ghost ships. Some believe there is a large dragon that attacks aircrafts and ships, dragging them into the sea, which is pretty fucking cool.
You mean like Godzilla?
Is Godzilla a dragon?
Is Godzilla a dragon? I'm not sure what Godzilla it is. Maybe a dragon dinosaur hybrid?
Be cool. I could fuck with that. That's neat.
Love that. Love that for us.
The area is known for sightings of ghost ships. A ghost ship is basically like a spirit of a ship. Like, it passes you. You think it's real, and then you look again, and it's gone, or, you know, just something like that. Reports of happenings in the sea date back to the 1200s. That's crazy.
That's a long time ago.
It's a long time ago. When Kublai Khan tried to invade Japan, he sent his ships into the Devil Sea, and he lost an estimated 40,000 men over 4 different attempts.
That's a lot.
A lot. Moving into the 1800s, sightings of a spooky lady are reported sailing on a ghost ship. In 1952, the Japanese government sent out research vessel the Kaiyu Maru No. 5 to investigate the mysterious claims of the Devil Triangle. And the ship disappeared, so did all 31 souls aboard. During the years 1952 to 1954, Japan lost 5 military ships that had 700 people in them all together.
That's a lot.
And, you know, this doesn't even include, like, fishing vessels or personal
vessels. This is just military stuff that they're recording.
Exactly. Over the years, many possible explanations have been given to what is happening in the area. Japan is part of the Ring of Fire, which is, like, a ton of fucking volcanoes. There could be volcanoes in the area, and underwater eruptions could easily take down a ship. The release of methane gas could topple a ship. Others have shifted the blame to underwater earthquakes, creating large waves to take out ships. Islands appear and disappear in the area all the time, so there's, like, shifting and water change levels. It's just a very, like, it's a very volatile area for travel. While most people will blame natural and geological forces for the mysterious happenings, a lot of our people who choose fun believe that UFOs and USOs, or unidentified submerged objects, are responsible for abducting the ships and planes that disappear without a trace.
I wonder what this Devil's Triangle area looks like from space.
You know, also, the thing with, like, the Devil's Triangle is, like, that's also what they call the Bermuda Triangle.
Sure.
So they're having, like, these triangles, and they always, like, bring it back to the devil, but I honestly think it just is, like, a deep part of the ocean.
What if it was Jesus's triangle? What about Jesus?
What about Jesus? Like, why can't he get a triangle? But no, I just think that these areas, they are, like, seismically active.
Sure.
And I think that they're just super deep, and that's why people aren't finding anything. The Hamakua Volcano. The Hamakua Volcano is located in Hawaii on the Big Island. The volcano goes by the name of Hamakualia. Again, guys, I don't speak Hawaiian or Polynesian or anything like that. So sorry if I offended you or cussed in your language. I don't know. There have been a lot of lost planes and ships that disappear within the vicinity of the volcano. More than paranormal, I think it just seems like this is a super active seismic spot. Because when Sanderson was making this list, they still didn't have, like, a full understanding of how volcanoes work.
Oh, so sure.
When you feel the earth moving and the electromagnetic disturbances, but also, like, think about it. Like, when you see a volcano explode, you get, like, balls of lightning and stuff. Like, it's a scary situation. And I can see how, like, before, like, our geologists really got in there, we're like, okay, what the hell is going on? How it appears to be paranormal. This one I thought was super cool. This is the South Atlantic Anomaly. I have never heard of this. Bear with me on this one because it's a little bit sciencey, but this is an actual real thing. And this is where the Earth's inner Van Allen radiation belt comes closest to the Earth's surface.
Okay.
It's a point where energy around the Earth originates from solar wind. Now, when I say inner, I don't mean like inside of the Earth crust. If you pretend like the Earth is your fist and you wrap your other hand around it, that's the inner Van Allen belt. And then there's an outer Van Allen belt that would go over your other fist. So it's like Earth, belt, one belt, and then two belts in space. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so that's what it is. Since the belt is at its lowest point in the atmosphere, it causes an influx of energy particles and higher than normal levels of radiation. So it'll disrupt satellites that are orbiting the Earth. And if a spacecraft is going like through the area where that belt is, it needs special shielding from it because it can mess with navigational equipment.
Sure.
Astronauts said that when they close their eyes, when they're in that Van Allen belt area that we're talking about in the anomaly, they can still see like shooting stars behind their eyes, if that makes sense. Like the vision is just so weird.
That sounds bizarre.
People claim that the area is responsible for the Global Star Satellite Network failure in 2007. And they also claim it's responsible for the disappearance of Air France Flight 447 in 2009. NASA has had laptops on ships crash in that area, and SpaceX has also experienced issues here. So any ship that has gone down, any plane that has gone down, they can directly relate it to that close point of the Earth's inner Van Allen belt. Easter Island made the list, which is super cool. Easter Island is a tiny island located off of the coast of Chile. It is the one with all the giant heads, right? Everybody knows. Yeah. But actually, if you dig down, they've got little bodies.
They do have little bodies.
While Easter Island is known for electromagnetic anomalies, the Moai heads were said to be the product of aliens by some theorists. Because the stones are like 800 pounds each, and they think that the native people would have had issues moving them. Easter Island is also home to the mysterious, Rongoongo writings.
That was a long one.
It's difficult. I've been tongue-tying that for like a week now. They are carved glyphs, and there's only about 24 samples of the writing that have survived the time. Researchers aren't exactly sure how old they are or if it's even a language at all because they haven't really found any writing tools. Some glyphs look similar to the writings of the native Rapapui people, and some have even claimed that they know what it says, but only high-ranking priests and ruling families were literate at the time.
Makes sense.
So in summary, like, they don't really know what the writing is, what it says, and it's just something else that adds to the mystery of the island.
Do you want me to grab this next one?
Yeah, why don't you jump in the next one for me?
The Great Zimbabwe Megaliths. Bum, bum, bum. These megaliths in Zimbabwe are over 900 years old and made of stone and took almost 300 years to complete. Archaeologists don't know which group of people living in Zimbabwe built it or why it was abandoned. There is no signs of fire or invasion. And it's like people who live there vanish, and it's massive structure, so it's built scary, and people just left.
Well, it's kind of crazy to, like, think about it, because when I looked at photos of this, it looks like this, like, weird city that was built up, and they estimate it took so long to make, and then the people just left. There's no signs of fire, there's no signs of war, there's nothing. So they just, for no reason that antiquity can produce, left this structure.
So bizarre.
It is so bizarre, because why would you take 300 years to build something
just... And then just leave?
Yeah. And I know that some of the tribes in the area were nomadic, but if you can be somewhere for 300 years, why?
Yeah.
It's spoopy. I don't know. Do you want to do the Wharton Basin too?
Yeah. Located on the west coast of Australia and in northeastern Indian Ocean, is the site of Wallaby Fracture Zone, which is the site of massive geological events such as huge earthquakes and tectonic plate shifting. It's kind of a dangerous spot. It's very similar to the Devil's Triangle, where planes and ships go missing. Most famously, Malaysian Flight 370 back in 2014.
I want to cover Malaysian Flight 370 so bad.
It's so weird.
I want to do it so bad. I think maybe that's got to be like when we do here in the future. Because there's there's so many. Okay, not only are there 1,000 conspiracy theories that we could take an entire episode to talk about, but just the details and like where things have washed up in like the ocean's currents, it's so creepy.
Do you want me to take Loyalty Island?
Yeah, take Loyalty
Island. Why don't I just take these last couple and then we'll just dive into Alaska? How about that? Yep.
Sounds great to me.
The border of Very Deep Trench near Fiji is not the deepest part of the ocean, but it's incredibly deep and hasn't been fully mapped. It exhibits similar electromagnetic and geological activity. Many planes and ships have gone missing in this area as well.
Yeah, I just think it's another one of those like deep ass parts of the ocean, because the ocean is terrifying, dude.
Ocean is terrifying.
Deep. We don't know all the stuff that lives down there. Like,
go into the ocean, you cowards. Fuck NASA. Fuck space. Go to the ocean. The North Pole. That's where Santa lives.
Santa? I know him.
Desolate, cold North is a vile vortex famed for the large amount of people that have gone missing. In 1845, 120 men went missing from an expedition and had to resort to cannibalism. So, you know, that's how we got Santa. Many explorers have lost their lives exploring the region. Lots of electromagnetic activity in different areas of the poles. Some theorists have pointed to the lost city of Atlantis is located under the ice of the North Pole. Which, I mean, I could see it.
The North Pole, and I think as well as the South Pole, is just like so unattainable that it just gives you that mystery, you know?
Yeah, for like, sure.
What could live there?
Anything besides Santa. South Pole, last pole. You can almost mirror the happenings of the North Pole in the South Pole. Antarctica is home of the researchers at this point and has been a budding tourism industry, which I did not know that, actually.
You didn't know? Okay, so it's really cool. It is a dream of mine to do this. It costs like $10,000 right now. But
you go to Antarctica?
So what you do is you fly down to Chile, right? And you head down to like the bottom, Patagonia. And Patagonia is gorgeous. But at these ports at the very tip of Chile, you can book passage on a voyage and you can have like 2 or 3 days. They take you through what's called the Drake Passage. And it is very choppy, very rough sea, and you're going to be sick the entire time. But you go through the Drake Passage and then you have a couple days on this boat where you can go and you have like a little bit of Antarctica to explore. And then there's like another island you can go get a passport stamp at. You can meet some of the researchers because they're lonely, you know? They're all just, there's like 60 of them that live there or something like that. And they're lonely and they just want to hang out with people. And it's cool. Like you can see like all the puffins and the penguins and some famous like designer in New York. He and his husband got married and the pictures were gorgeous.
I want to go to there. Have you seen John Carpenter's 1980s The Thing? Takes place in Antarctica.
Oh, okay.
So North Pole, carbon copy of the South Pole, and vice versa.
Yeah, and you know, for a while too, like Antarctica was very trendy with these incredibly rich British men who had nothing but money and they could just call themselves an explorer for a living.
Oh, sure.
They would put together these parties and they would head down to Antarctica and
disappear.
And, you know, there was also a lot of ties to like Nazi Germany and Adolf Hitler with his fascination with Antarctica and what could, and because you know what it is, it's what could be under the ice, because it wasn't always ice. So what could be under the ice? And so narwhals. Narwhal. I hope so. I love narwhals. But there's just a ton of mystery surrounding these spots. And I don't know. I'm kind of into the whole Antarctica thing. I would do an Antarctica episode.
Yeah, why not? Mysteries of Antarctica. It's different. Yeah. Something's weird.
I'd sit through it.
I'd make it happen for you. Whatever you want. Bermuda Triangle. Lastly, just to, you know, kind of talk about it. It exists. We'll get into it next episode, so we're not going to really dive too deep. Do you want to do Alaska first, or do you want me to do Bridgewater first? Because Bridgewater is not very big.
Okay, yeah, go ahead and do Bridgewater.
Okay, let me just pull up my notes. Okay, so the Bridgewater Triangle is an area about 200 square miles in southeastern Massachusetts, claimed to be the site of paranormal phenomena ranging from UFOs, to poltergeists, orbs, balls of fire, and other spectral phenomena, various Bigfoot-like sightings, giant snakes, and, of course, thunderbirds.
Ooh, I do love a good thunderbird story.
Right? Aren't thunderbirds dope? We should do thunderbirds sometime.
It could be in our cryptid list.
Cryptid list! The location is specific boundaries of Bridgewater Triangle were first defined by cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman, who coined the term in the 1970s. And then in his book, Mysterious America, Mysterious and Historic Places and Landmarks, we have Hockomock Swamp, which is central to the area, which means a place where spirits dwell. Dighton Rock, which is also found within the boundaries of the Bridgewater Triangle. Freetown Fall River State Forest has reportedly been the site of various cult activities, including animal sacrifice, ritualistic murders, committed by admitted Satanists, as well as a number of gangland murders and numbers of suicides. So that's going to amp up some activity right there. Sure. Profile Rock, which is supposed site of Wampanoag historical figure Anawan, received the lost wampum belt from Philip. The legend has it that the ghost of a man has been seen sitting on the rock with his legs crossed with outstretched arms, located in the state park forest. And it's really cool. It's like the profile rock of, like, it looks like a face almost.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's definitely, I can send it to you if you're interested. It yeah. was actually according to Wikipedia, there the little clip they use is a 1902 postcard photo showing profile rock. Okay. Which is cool. Yeah. Solitude Stone, which is an inscribed stone located near Forest Street in West Bridgewater, Mass., which was found near a missing person's body. Also known as Suicide Stone, the rock was found with the inscription, "All ye who in future days walk by Knockasacket stream, love not him but who hummed his lay cheerful to the parting beam, but a beautiful that he wode."
What does that even mean?
I have no idea. It's Old English.
Yeah, that was difficult.
That was difficult. It was difficult to read, and it's difficult to comprehend. Thunderbird sightings.
Yes!
Giant birds or pterodactyl-like flying creatures with a wingspan of 8 to 12 feet are claimed to have been seen in Hockomock Swamp or in neighboring Taunton, including a report by Norton Police Sergeant Thomas Downey. So, we have police sightings. Animal mutilations, we won't get into that. That's just shitty. There's also Native American curses. According to one tale, a Native American had cursed the swamp centuries ago because of the poor treatment they received from colonial settlers. Surprise! A revered object of the Wampanoag people, the belt known as the Wampum Belt, was lost during King Philip's War. Legend says that the area owes its paranormal unrest to the fact that this belt was lost from the native people, which, yes, I can totally get down with that.
Yep, I can see it.
Right. What else do we have? Is that all we have? That's all we have on Bridgewater. I mean, there's an actual Bridgewater Triangle documentary on Amazon Prime faux free, if you are interested.
Okay.
It's like a hearty hour and 45 minutes. It's pretty good.
Okay.
But it just kind of, like, breaks down, like, exactly, like, all of those things that I just mentioned, but, like, goes more in-depth into each one. Especially the wampum belt.
Yeah, that sounds cool. I want to learn about that.
So. Yeah. So that is the Bridgewater Triangle. Massachusetts is weird. And
Massachusetts
is weird, and kind of why J.K. Rowling did her whole Ivermorny thing was because of the Bridgewater Triangle.
Oh, I forgot about the American Hogwarts.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I can see it. I can see that. That's cool.
And it took place in, like, if you were to put Ivermorny somewhere, it was within the Bridgewater Triangle, and that's why nobody could, according to J.K. Rowling lore, mm-hmm. It was why nobody could find it, was because it was within the triangle.
Okay, that makes sense. That right. makes Okay.
That's why you muggles can't find it.
Yeah.
That's okay. The Bermuda Triangle. Now on to Alaska.
Okay, the Alaska Triangle. The Alaska Triangle is a massive stretch of land that connects Juneau, Anchorage, and the Barrow Mountain Range.
That's
the area is full of lakes, rivers, mountains, and frozen tundras. Since 1988, more than 16,000 people have disappeared without a trace, which is a rate twice as high as the national average per 1,000 people.
That's a lot.
Granted, you can chuck the disappearances up to Alaska, but this area is home to tons of cryptid sightings, the Alaska Bigfoot sightings reign supreme in this area. It's literally a perfect Bigfoot area. There are reports of the Otterman, or as the native Tlingit people called him, Kushkataka. And stories date back 11,000 years for this cryptid. It's described as like brown fur or hair, an almost normal human face, tall with hands. People say it lives close to the water and eats fish, clams, and vegetation. The Kushkataka slaps, is it Kushkata? I don't know how to say it.
I think it's Kushkataka.
Kushkataka. It's hard. Kushkata. I've heard it said a bunch of different ways. I'm going to be honest with you. I like Kushkata, but if I'm wrong, yell at me.
I don't think any of our listeners are going to yell at you for being incorrect.
Honestly, yeah. I'm wrong all the time, but it's fine. So basically, one of the main things that people think is that this Otterman they're seeing is also Bigfoot. So they probably didn't know what Bigfoot was, a great ape was, but they are familiar with an otter. And they're familiar sure. with an otter having hands and dark hair.
Yeah.
And they're seeing it the size of a man. Hence, it literally translates to otter man. And the thing is, it like slaps rocks together like the otters do. So they kind of, that's where the name is coming from. Now, lore of the area says that the Kushkata will lure potential victims to the water by mimicking the voice of a child or a woman yelling for help. Once the Kushkata attacks, it steals the soul of its victim, and those people are never seen again. Now, other stories say that they get ripped up and used as food, and some tribes believe that if you were lured by a Kushkata, you then became one.
Ooh, okay.
I kind of like that twist.
Yeah, that's a good twist.
Other cryptids of the area include giant thunderbird, 1,000 different forms of Bigfoot.
For sure.
And the Alaskan Loch Ness Monster, who is the Lake Ileana Monster.
Oh, she's probably cute.
Now, there was a television show called Alaska Monsters on Destination America. It explored the triangle zone by zone, hunting different cryptids. With cast members named Krusty, Little Bear, and Face, I think you could tell it was very serious and the science there was just irrefutable.
I'll listen to Krusty.
Now, there were 2 seasons of the show. In the first season, they hunted the Bushman, which was a Bigfoot, the Saber Wolf, which was a giant wolf, the Alaska Giant, which was supposed to be a giant bear, which is probably actually there, the Alaska Tiger, another Bigfoot called Hairy Man. And then season 2 was all different names for Bigfoot, Bigfoots, all different Bigfoots.
Okay.
So what it is, the area is rich with native lore and eyewitness accounts of cryptid animals. Oh, and before I forget, the Travel Channel had a show called The Alaska Triangle, where they looked into like mysterious disappearances and downed planes and all of that stuff too. So the Alaska Triangles had a couple different shows, and I think Josh Gates has looked at it. I like him. He's snarky. I don't know.
I like him too. I like his accessories that he wears.
I always love that they get him a shitty car no matter where he is. Like,
yeah. Is it like a joke? Do you think?
It's like a running joke now. But it's like you have the budget for a decent vehicle, but everywhere he goes, they get him a shitty car. Okay, so moving from cryptids to humans, Alaska has a massive missing persons issue. First, I think it's important that we acknowledge the missing and murdered indigenous people, primarily women and children in Alaska. These cases are not as investigated as a missing tourist. And this issue is not just for missing Native women and Native people of Alaska and Canada, but all Native women and all Native people of every tribe on every reservation everywhere. So they have a huge issue with that, and they are just not looked for as hard as they are looked for everywhere else.
I know Israel Keyes was in this area as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, Alaska is a vast wilderness where people go to get lost. Because they are either looking for a challenging living situation, see if they can live off the land. They are outdoors people, and they love the beautiful, beautiful nature of Alaska. Or they're looking to get lost for a more sinister reason. They want to live in a place where a lot of people do not ask questions. Because people go to Alaska to get away from the things they have done in the lower 48.
Yeah, Alaska is like no man's land. You know what I mean? That's not where Dexter Morgan went. Dexter Morgan went to Oregon. I lied.
Yeah. But no, I mean, Israel Keyes, serial killer, he was running around Alaska killing people. I mean, there's been multiple killers who have stalked Alaska and the Alaska Triangle area because it is so easy to just stash a body where no one will ever find it.
Right.
You know, another thing with Alaska and these missing people is that, like, if you are not the most experienced outdoorsman, it is incredibly easy for something really horrible to happen.
Yeah, Alaska is, like, non-forgiving territory.
It really isn't. The weather changes so fast in Alaska. And honestly, just in the mountains in general, like, if you've been mountains in Oregon, Washington, Colorado, you know that a storm can just blow in. And if you're not prepared for that, you're utterly fucked.
My grandfather actually worked on the Alaskan pipeline, and that's how he was able to pay for my dad to immigrate to America.
I mean, and there's work like that up there. I mean,
yeah,
you actually pay people oil dividends who live in Alaska because a lot of their workforce is on the pipeline up there.
Yeah.
You have to live in Alaska for like X amount of months a year in order to qualify for those dividends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's at least 8 months because you got to go through that weird light cycle that they do.
Also, a lot of the homes are like half built in the more rural areas of Alaska because you don't have to pay taxes on the home until you have it fully built.
I mean, that's smart, but that's also annoying as shit.
Yeah. But okay, so if you want to read a really beautifully done and fact-laden piece regarding Alaska and its missing people problem, The Atlantic has an article called In the Land of Missing Persons by Alex Tizon. Great piece. Really well done. It tells of two different missing people stories, the impact it has, and how common things like that are in Alaska. It's super well done. None of it applies to this shitty podcast because it's super logical.
Hey, don't talk about our podcast like that.
Well, they didn't come here for logic this episode. Well, fun, okay?
It's not shitty.
Rumors have been swirling for a long time that the triangles are full of these energy vortices and people get sucked into them and just happen to like sidestep into a new dimension and are unable to return. The triangle is also famous for massive UFO sightings and reports of alien abduction. So there was a pseudo documentary made a long time ago called The Fourth Kind. Do you remember that movie?
I do. And it was actually kind of scary.
I thought it was kind of scary, too. I was really hoping you liked it because I liked it and I didn't want to be embarrassed because you're
I mean, I just love all horror. I especially love, like, UFO horror because it could be real.
Yeah, and, like, that's the thing with this documentary. It follows, it claims it's based on a true story. Meh, I don't think it is. But it follows like this lady. She's like a psychologist or psychiatrist or something.
Yeah, she is. She's a medical professional for sure. Yeah,
she lives in Nome, Alaska, and the people in Nome, there's just not something right, and it's just this whole tale of like alien abductions and people are going missing, and like at one point this guy kills his family because he finds out about it, and it's just this whole story, and this is like almost kind of like common lore of what happens in Alaska. Every newspaper like article you'll find says, oh, that's not really what happens, blah, 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 blah. It's all Hollywood. But people really, really think that that's kind of what's happening in Alaska. Like, these people are being abducted. Now, in 1986, a year before I was born, a plane from a Japanese airline was flying from Iceland to Anchorage and was within the confines of the triangle. The pilot and the crew all saw three UFO follow the plane for about 400 miles. The UFOs were flashing lights, and they were so obvious that actually air traffic control was also able to pick them up. The pilot stated that there were three ships. One was larger and two were smaller, calling the larger one a mother ship because it was significantly bigger than the two smaller ones. He said that the two smaller ships were directly in front of the plane at a super close distance, but then they disappeared really quick, but then they would appear again, then they would speed up, and then they would stop. And the pilot actually had to fly at a lower than normal altitude to get away from them. The UFO encounter lasted for 32 minutes, which I feel like is a significant amount of time for something like that.
Did you just hear about the pilot in New Mexico who just had a UFO sighting?
I looked at the article title. I did not click on it. What was it about?
Just exactly what it is, and the pilot nor air traffic control can explain what had occurred.
So weird. So crazy.
So spaceship.
So traveling through the triangle can be an experiment in disorientation, really. The navigational equipment is known to fail. This could also account for some of the disappearances and missing planes in Alaska. Since a lot of the state is not connected by road, flying is the best option to get supplies, mail, and people to more remote areas. One of the most famous accounts of a missing plane is from October of 1972. U.S. Majority Leader Hale Boggs and Alaska Congressman Russell Brown and Congressman Nick Begich, plus their pilot Don Johns, were traveling on a private plane somewhere between Juneau and Anchorage when the plane disappeared.
You know, John Johns wore aviators when they were not necessary.
Oh, I can see him in my mind doing that.
Yep.
A massive search and rescue operation was immediately implemented with more than 50 private planes and 40 military craft searching 32,000 square miles. And they found nothing. Not a scrap of metal, not a seatbelt, not a suit jacket, nothing. Now, it's interesting. There's a lot of controversy. Some people think it's alien abduction. Some people think it's sabotage on purpose because Hale Boggs was on the Warren Commission and disagreed with the findings. So there's a little bit of JFK conspiracy thrown in there. Now, Alaska is just a beautiful, scary, and mysterious place. And I think, personally, it deserves a spot on the Vile Vortices list. Because it's way more spooky than the volcano.
Oh, for sure. Volcanoes are spooky, but not in the same way.
Right. But I also put together a list of other triangles that you guys can look into on your own in case it's something that, like, sparks your interest. So there is the Bass Strait Triangle, the Bennington Triangle, Broadhaven Triangle, Falkirk Triangle, Pag Triangle, Polynesian Triangle, the Michigan Triangle, the Matlock Triangle, and the Rombolan Triangle.
Rombolan!
It's fun! It's fun! It's creepy!
I was just in Michigan, but I was not in a triangle, to my knowledge.
Well, I mean, you don't know until you look at it, dude. You could have survived the Michigan Triangle.
I could have! How bizarre.
How bizarre.
Ta-da. You're welcome.
Stuck in my head forever.
It's my jam.
If you liked what you hear, make sure you follow us on social media. You can find the show at Toil and Trouble Podcast on Facebook. We're at Toil and Trouble Podcast on Instagram. We are on Twitter at Toil and Trouble _. Ash, where can everyone find you?
You can find me at Gory_Feldman on Instagram.
And you can find me on Instagram at Victoria Red Velvet. And I am on Twitter at Tor is Boring. If you like what you hear, rate and review. I want to get us to 100. That was my goal last year, was to get to 100 reviews, and we didn't get it. We got to 82, so I want more. Leave us
That's
a review.
Pretty close.
We're so close. Tell a friend about a show. That's your homework. Tell a friend. I guess we will see you not this upcoming Friday, but the one after it. And we'll be talking about the Bermuda Triangle. I'll be in Colorado, though, when that episode comes out.
Ooh.
Because my friend Becca is getting married.
Marriage.
my wish. We're going to run around the mountains for a couple days, and she's going to get married. And
in the mountains?
Yeah. So in Empire, there's a nice, like, mountain outlook over there. And then me and my family are going to shoot up to Estes Park, and we're having dinner at the Stanley, the Shining Hotel, the Overlook.
I'm so excited for you. It's going to be so much fun.
I've been there once before, but I haven't, like, gotten to have dinner there, so it'll be good. But okay, guys, we will see you next time. Creep it real.
Bye.
Creep it real good. Ma, 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 ma.